From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
The Mission. Excelsior.
Redwood City.
American Canyon.
San Francisco.
Coming up, we'll hear how hospitals are helping kids relax before surgeries without medicine.
Three, two, one. All right, let's get ready for our blast off. You're going to feel the rocket ship start to move.
Then a San Francisco literary event takes its show into the great outdoors.
When the state park says, hey, do you want to do a show in the amphitheater? It's like, yes, like, that's a dream.
And we'll hear the story behind this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound. Expect the unexpected today on Cross Currents. Most people get a little anxious before they have surgery, especially kids. Anti-anxiety medicines can help, but anesthesiologists in the Bay Area have come up with an alternative that's safer and cheaper, and as reporter Jenny Gold reports, is more fun too.
Matthew Hughesby has been sick since he was born.
My colon doesn't work. And it has a lot of gas in there that it can't get out, so then it starts floating.
He has a rare genetic illness, and at the age of 10, he's already had anesthesia dozens of times. He's used to it now, but even this surgical pro still gets some butterflies. His mom, Cullen Hughesby, says when he was younger, the experience was terrifying.
I think it feels really closed in, and when you're getting a mask put on you and then people standing all around, and he would shake and cry and scream.
That's pretty common, and it can be dangerous. Crying increases the risk kids will inhale something into their lungs during anesthesia. Anxiety can also cause long-term psychological wounds and a more painful recovery from surgery. Dr. Sam Rodriguez is an anesthesiologist at the Lucile Packard Children's Hospital at Stanford.
For many families and kids, this is one of the most stressful events in their entire lives.
Increasingly, hospitals are turning to solutions other than anti-anxiety meds to help kids relax. Things like letting kids decorate their anesthesia masks with stickers, playing doctor with their stuffed animals, and telling jokes.
What's the difference between a snowman and a snowwoman?
Snowballs.
Snowballs, correct. That's for our older patients.
Rodriguez had another idea. Distract these tech-savvy young kids with a movie right in front of their eyes.
We have a projection unit that is mounted on the bed, along with a projection screen that is infection control compliant, which took us a very long time to design.
Rodriguez calls it BERT, short for Bedside Entertainment Theater. It looks high tech, but he and a coworker actually made it in his basement for about $900. Today, Matthew Hughesby gets to try one out. Rodriguez visits Matthew in his pre-op room, wearing a Spider-Man surgical cap.
Matthew, we meet again. Are you going by Matthew or Matt?
Matthew.
Keep it formal. I like it.
Matthew is excited to pick his own video. He's got lots to choose from. Action, sports, cartoons, music videos.
So which category?
The cartoon Disney.
Cartoon Disney category. Perfect. So right now we have Dragon, we have Frozen Mix.
At first, they were letting kids pick anything they wanted off YouTube, but they had to stop.
Believe it or not, pretty much all of the most recent Justin Bieber videos are inappropriate.
After a few questions for his parents, Matthew is ready to go to surgery.
So we're going to unlock the bed, we're going to start rolling back. Dad, want to give some kisses? Mom, you're coming with us, right?
He doesn't have time to worry as he's rolled through the hospital corridor. He's immersed in an episode of the cartoon Ninjago, and Dr. Rodriguez, also a Ninjago fan, is peppering him with questions.
Matthew, do you have any of the Ninjago characters, toys, anything like that?
In the operating room, Rodriguez switches the movie to one he's designed and edited himself.
Now time to hook up our space monitors.
Space monitors, let's get our space monitors.
You will need your special space mask. All right,
space mask. We got our space mask right here, right?
And prepare for the countdown.
It's a full blast-off experience, where the kid feels like they're taking a trip to the moon instead of going under for surgery.
All right, let's get ready for our countdown. Three, two, one. All right, let's get ready for our blast-off. You're going to feel the rocket ship start to move.
The nurses gather around the bed, shaking it.
You feel it? Can you smell the rocket fuel? Take a deep breath, man. Good job, buddy.
Matthew, are you still with us?
And Matthew is asleep and ready for surgery. Afterwards, his mom looks relieved.
I don't think he even saw all the machines and everything around him, because that can be really intimidating.
A few hours later, Matthew woke up. He didn't feel great, but he was still in good spirits. He wanted to make clear that he did not actually believe he was going to the moon.
It just felt like I was going to sleep.
Was it a cooler going to sleep process than the ones you've had in the past?
Yeah, it looked way cooler, and it didn't feel like I was taking off, but it was really fun anyways.
And fun doesn't sound like a bad way to go into surgery. I'm Jenny Gold in Palo Alto, California.
That was reporter Jenny Gold with Kaiser Health News. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Okay, we all know what a mixtape is. But what do you think of when you hear literary mixtape? For San Francisco writer Evan Karp, it means an event where each author reads without introduction or banter, so that their words collectively form a composite work of art. That's the idea behind Quiet Lightning, Karp's reading series, and the nonprofit that puts it on. Since 2009, they've showcased over 700 authors. Evan Karp spoke with KALW's Jen Chien.
Tell me about the name Quiet Lightning. Where did that come from?
Oh, man. It came from trying to describe the feeling in the room when somebody who's been talking, and there's a lot of people who've been listening to them, and that person stops talking, but the sort of electricity or the energy is the words are bouncing around the room and bouncing around people's heads sort of collectively. So I guess that was trying to describe that.
So there are a lot of literary readings and events. It's a pretty rich literary scene here in the Bay Area. What do you think that Quiet Lightning brings that's different, or what do you want to bring into the community that's your own?
That's a good question. I mean, when it was started originally, the idea was to sort of subvert the egocentricity of readings that seems sort of innately embedded into the format of most readings.
What did you notice about the readings that you were going to that showed you that egocentrism?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's all mostly an innocent thing. I think it was just people saying, you know, people reading long bios of the readers thanking the hosts and everybody for coming. And, you know, it's sort of like, obviously you're happy to be here. We all know that we're here for the poetry or for the story, or, you know, to hear what you've created more so than how you feel
than
you should feel.
Than right a bio now. Or...
Yeah, all that stuff. I mean, especially now when Quiet Lightning started, I guess, in 2009, the internet was becoming a very social place at that time. And I think it was becoming a more central role in people's lives. And I think at that point, it was sort of like, well, you could just put the bios online and we'll all know who you're talking about.
If you want to look it up, you can look it up. Totally. If not, just enjoy the poetry.
Totally. So that's part of it. Another part of it is when people are inviting their friends, or, you know, they're sort of cliquey.
The insular nature of some of the events.
Totally. So that's part of it. And then another part is mixing established, so to speak, artists with emerging artists.
So you have a big show coming up. You're celebrating your 100th show. It's got the usual blind submission picked readers, but also some special guests and some dance and music. It's taking place on Mount Tam. Yeah. So how was the process for putting this show together different from other Quiet Lightning readings?
Well, it's been a lot more intensive. We're, you know, working with the California State Parks and the Golden Gate National Parks Conservancy are our co-producers. It's the centennial of the national parks.
That's right.
This year.
So there's a nice hunnit thing going on here.
Yeah, there's a cool synchronicity there.
We have a clip of one of the neighborhood heroes that are going to be in the show this year. It's Tongo Eisenmartin, who is a local, wonderful local poet.
This poem is called The Crazy Ones. Names have never sat well with us crazy ones. All the others wear their names like a new suit of clothes. When they make new friends, they babble their names. They're in a rush to print them on tiny white cards that pass from hand to hand, filled with the joy of innocent things. And what happiness they radiate, those Alfredos and Antonios, those hard-luck wines and silent Sergios, those Alejandros rank with the musk of the sea. All those names flowing out the same throat that calls them out like proud flags on a battlefield, names still kicking around on earth, making noise even after they've gone off with their bones into the shadows. But the crazy ones, oh Lord, the crazies, who suffocate from forgetting so much, we poor crazy cats get even our laughter mixed up and our happiness fills with tears. How are we going to get anywhere dragging our names along, looking out for them, polishing them like miniature silver animals, seeing with these eyes that even dreams can't control, that don't get lost in the dust that flatters and hates us? We mad ones just can't hope to have anyone name us, but we'll forget about this too.
That was Tongo Eisenmartin, one of the poets who's going to be featured at Quiet Lightning's Poetry in the Parks show. Since 2009, Quiet Lightning has put on 1,100 readings, more than 1,100 readings, around there.
Yeah, it's about 1,100. I've counted it a few times, and you know, it's give or take a few.
So you've worked with hundreds of authors. You've done over 100 events every year. How do you manage to keep up with that volume of putting stuff out?
Well, the monthly shows are, I think we're equipped for them now. I mean, we've been doing them every month for, you know, since December of 2009. And it does feel like a miracle every month still that it all comes together, that we get the books back on time, you know, that all the authors show up. And doing, we that is an average of more than one show a month if you add it up. And I guess I would just say that we people have been asking us to do things as we've become more well-known or just done more shows with different people and different organizations. And so, you know, learning how to say no has been something that I've had to do.
You have to learn how to practice that.
And then I went through a phase of saying no, and that was good. And then I went through another phase of saying yes, because, you know, when the state parks says, hey, do you want to do a show in the amphitheater? It's like, yes, like, that's a dream.
Maybe I don't know how it's going to happen, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes and hope everything comes together.
What do you personally get out of doing Quiet Lightning? It is a lot of work, as you were saying.
I've met almost everybody I know through Quiet Lightning. All of the board members I originally met through Quiet Lightning. It's community for me. It's also an experience of art by both people that I do and don't know on a regular basis. And that's been a very healthy thing for me to hear. How people express themselves and what they have to say. It's maybe an exercise in listening. I think it reinforces for me what I want to do as a writer personally. It certainly helps me grow just by paying attention to people.
That was Evan Karp, director of Quiet Lightning, speaking with KALW's Jen Chien. Quiet Lightning is celebrating their 100th show this weekend with a day of poetry and music at the Cushing Memorial Mountain Theater of Mount Tamalpais. Find more information and a link to their Kickstarter campaign at kalw.org. Click Crosscurrents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's KALW's Julie Kane.
All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
Please pick up all of our packages. I have the baggage door, which is located next to Bureau 47. Thank you.
Did you recognize that? Well, we recorded in a place you may have passed through on your way to somewhere else. But you might have been in such a hurry to grab your belongings and get home that you didn't even notice where the music you heard was coming from. KALW's Mary Lee Williams takes us there.
I play a mini Martin, generally used for children.
That's Nathaniel Gastan, and he's talking about his guitar.
I like it because it's nice and sleek, and it actually plays out pretty well for a setting like this.
He's in the band Courage with Robert Bradford, who plays a Rogue guitar.
It's just bigger. Like it works well because it's really loud for like acoustic kind of things, just outdoors type of stuff.
They chose these instruments for a reason, and not because they're playing outside. They're currently wedged in the corner near the arrivals board. Yeah, the arrivals board in baggage claim. More specifically, Terminal 2 at the Oakland International Airport. The band Courage started playing at the airport about a year ago, but they didn't just wander in and decide to set up shop. They're busking, meaning they perform for tips. They have a few bucks right now, but it should speed up later. The profits all depend on how many flights come through during their Thursday time slot from 2 to 5 in the afternoon. But really, it's not about the money. They're here for the exposure.
Thank you.
In the summer, about 500,000 travelers pass through Terminal 2 every month. Bradford says the band used to perform regularly at BART stations, but they wanted to branch out.
It's like we get older and we like have more responsibilities and we like trying to get the music actually recorded and stuff. So we were like, let's try to do something that's a little more productive in that short time span that we do have.
Meaning the band wants to get noticed, and they have. Last month, they averaged 1 to 2 outside bookings a week.
Some are intimate, like house parties or like just like a little event. Some are festivals. We've done weddings, we've done birthdays, get reunions, just pretty much everything.
Jeff Anderson from Castro Valley noticed this music in Terminal 2 while waiting to pick up his sister, who's flying in from Denver. He walked straight up to them and asked if they do gigs, short notice.
Well, we're having a wedding on Sunday.
Okay. This Sunday? Okay.
Yeah. And we have like a reception.
Anderson says he's never noticed the music at the Oakland airport before. It's easy to see how a live performance could get drowned out in a noisy space like this.
Heat, heat, heat.
Something like that.
That's Brian Kidd, a spokesperson for the Port of Oakland Marketing Department. He was just imitating this beep. This is a sound that happens about 100 times a day. It signals that a baggage carousel is starting.
Oh, then you hear a, which would be the baggage claim going around and around the carousel.
About 4 years ago, live music got added to the mix.
It was really an easy way to make the airport a little less sterile and a little more human.
Musicians have to apply for a busking spot, and the Port of Oakland Marketing Department doesn't take just anyone. Kid says this beatboxer wasn't a fit because he used a microphone. The marketing department is wary of music that requires amplification.
It just starts to become this escalation with the general noise in the terminal and people, you know, you're then competing with people, and we just want it to be in the background, and sometimes performers think that they want to be front and center, and that's not really the purpose.
Yes, that's a piano version of Drake's Hotline Bling, and you might hear it if you're in Terminal 2 on Tuesday and Friday evening from 5 to 9 p.m. Navarone Boo has been busking at the airport for about 3 years, and Hotline Bling is one of his favorite songs to play. Boo performs without any sheet music because he can't read it. He's 20 years old and self-taught.
The tough part about this place is that 99% of the people aren't listening because, you know, they have busy days and sometimes they're not in the mood.
Like Rohan Kumar. He just flew into Oakland from San Diego, and he's one of the 99% paying no attention to Boo. He thought the music was coming from the speakers.
I kind of just rushed straight for the baggage and almost didn't even notice that there was somebody playing a piano back there.
Kumar says he liked the music, but he was skeptical of the economics.
You know, usually you tip somebody for exceptional service that you've noticed, you know? And so it's interesting that buskers kind of blend in, yet, you know, they rely on those few individuals that I guess can notice their presence somehow.
Boo says he sees the terminal as his chance to play for thousands of people, even if not everyone is paying attention. But he made enough in tips to pay for the keyboard he's playing. And he says Terminal 2 is a great place to practice.
There's a few times where people, they're lined up just to come and talk to me and say, wow, you do such a great job. It's like, yes, I am in the background, but there's some times where it just feels so great because people are into it, they're enjoying the music.
Boo is heading to college to study music theory next year. He still plans on busking once a week to play for that 1% of travelers who are listening. From Oakland International Airport, I'm Mary Lee Williams for Cross Currents.
We didn't have a winner this week, but do not fret. You'll have a chance to win again next week. Are you ready for your sneak listen? Here we go.
Do you want change for your five?
My name is Sherry Jean Cooper. I'm known in Oakland as Sherry Jean the Waitress Machine.
Think you know what that is and where we recorded it? Give us a call and tell us. 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. It's always great to hear from you. Thanks so much for listening and thanks for playing. I'm Julie Kane.
Thanks, Julie. Well, if you have other mysterious sounds you think would make a great audiograph, give us a call and tell us about them. Leave a message at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and we just might use it. And that's it for us today. Our team includes Josiah Luis Alderete, Jurgen Clem, Leela Day, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston, Chris Hoff, Lucy Kang, Justine Lee, Greer McVeigh, Lisa Morehouse, James Rowland, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Andrew Stelzer. Today's show was engineered by Ted Muldoon. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This is vintage hip hop from the Coup of Oakland. They're playing at this year's Life is Living Festival, and this year the focus is on remembering the Black Panther Party. The free festival is Saturday at DeFremery Park from 10 a.m. to 7 o'clock. Head to our website to find out more details. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. If you got the nerve, lash out for your just desserts. It's not just the words. Some of y'all heads up in the cloud. I'ma bring y'all back to earth. It's black back to burn. Bull y'all talking about. Out your mouth, I'm not concerned. Cause y'all got to learn. It's y'all turn like Detroit Red. When his head had an ultra perm. The long walk, I burn your bare heels. So throw on your boots. The game camouflage like army suits. But I can see it more clear. Cause I came with the coupe in here. Ring the alarm, inform the troops. Send them out into the world. Go to war on the fluke. Eye to eye with the enemy. You sworn to shoot. Now I'm coming at your neck, sick of hearing something.